the best fluffer in the world.
Next to you.
My pillow needs a fluffing too, Steve. Lee, sorry. Joe Connery, alcoholic. If you guys could bear with me for a minute, I was meditating a little while ago, and if we could do just something really different, if you could just, I want to open with a moment of silence, because I have a funny feeling there's somebody in this room tonight that's suffering from alcoholism, suffering with the ability, not the ability to say help. Just 15 seconds. Thank you. Steve, thank you. Thank you for having it, and everybody that's been here. I've just talked with a lot of people this week and had dinner and lunch and breakfast, and I just I'm pretty much a loner. I'm a big loner in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love being sober, and I love being here, and I've been out in the water. And Steve, this is the first night this week that you haven't said, has anybody done anything for the first time today? You didn't say that. I got my first 3-point shot at the basketball court today. My first 3-point shot. It was, and somebody was walking by when I got it. I don't know if you're here tonight. And they went, cool! And I went, that's so cool, you know. And then I tried and tried and tried and tried, and I got another one, but I was worn out. Okay, let me explain something. I live in San Diego. I'm from Massachusetts. I was born and raised in the Boston area, Norwood. And I moved out to San Diego drunk in 1988. And I've been sober since January 1st, 1989. Okay? I took my last drink on New Year's Eve. I got 12-stepped by a guy named Dick D, who was a comedian, a professional comedian. I worked in comedy stores in Boston. And Dick had been sober for 8 years. And I didn't know what sober was, and I couldn't stand this guy. I thought he was the biggest boob I ever met in my life. And he was the guy that I reached out to for help. And he said, I wasn't done yet. And he said, Joe, there'll come a time when you're done with drinking. If you ask some power greater than yourself for help, you'll probably never have to take another drink as long as you live. And I didn't believe that. I gave him the finger, and I left Boston the next day. And I drove out to Montecito with my brother. He lives up in the Santa Barbara area, and he works for these wealthy people. And they lived in White Plains, New York, in the summer, and then Montecito in the winter. And he used to drive them back and forth every year. So I hitched a ride. I thought I drove out all the way. He said I was loaded all the way out, and I didn't drive at all. I swear to God, I drove. But then, I didn't know what I wanted. I didn't want sobriety. Dick scared me. He scared me, and I didn't want anything to do with it. And I didn't know if that was what was going to happen. And 6 weeks later, on New Year's Day, I actually I said, God, I need help. I actually wrote it down in a journal. I said, I'm an alcoholic. I need help. And from that moment to this, I still struggle to say I need help. But that's why I wanted to open with that little thing, because I know there's a lot of people in this room that have a difficult time saying, I need help. You will say, everything's fine, I'm wonderful, it's great, I'm having a great time. You go back to your room and you cry. We all know that. You know, and it's okay to say to people, you know, I'm really struggling with all the happy sons of bitches in AA. You know, I hated Alcoholics Anonymous when I got sober. Absolutely hated it. Absolutely hated it. I first started going to meetings in Long Beach. I met this guy named Marty Leahy. God rest his soul. He died probably about 15 years ago. I used to go to a meeting on Friday night at the Atlantic Club in Long Beach. And it was just, I would go to the meeting, and it was almost like some of the crap that's been happening this weekend is really cool. If you get a chance to come to the meeting before the meeting here, watch how seats are rearranged so everybody can actually get comfortable. It's really funny. And a couple other things I've noticed. I'm a big observer. I've been observing all week long. Steve, that piercing stuff is lousy. It doesn't work. Because I'll tell you what, there's people with a plate on the other side of the room that start their piercing 20 feet away. And they're running. And I'm ready to reach for my meat. And they're going, boom! And it's crazy to watch what's going on out there. People are walking around like this. I'm like, what? Your plate is overflowing with food, and you're trying to put more on it. Jesus, you can't. That thing's open for hours. So anyway, I thought I'd mention that. Just an observation, you know. Alcoholism. So anyway, where was I? I was up in Long Beach, and so I used to go to this Friday night meeting, and I would watch. I didn't know anything about AA. I didn't know anything about AA. The only thing I knew that this guy, Dick D, 12-stepped me, and he said, there'll come a time when you're done with drinking. ask God for help and something will happen. And then when I guess I go to AA now, and I didn't know a soul. So I'm going to this meeting on Friday night, and I would go in and I'd see everybody putting keys on the chair. I guess that's what you do, I guess. So I put my key on the chair. And then I would go and I'd walk around and smoke a cigarette because I didn't want to talk to anybody. So I'm walking around, waiting for the meeting to start. Just about 8 o'clock, I go into the meeting, and everybody's happy, joyous, and free, and blah, 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 woof, 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 woof. And, blah, blah, blah. And I sit there, and then I try to get out of there. You know, they do the happy, our Father, and all that stuff. And everybody's really happy, and I'm just dying, dying. Got to get out of there. And then I realized that I had put my key on the far side of the room, so I had to go through all the crowd to get out. And this guy, Marty Leahy, I called him the bouncer of AA. He was the happiest son of a bitch I'd ever met in my life about being sober. And he used to bounce. He loved the newcomers. That's another thing. It's another thing I want to talk about. You know, I met a guy named Rich Max. I don't know if you're here tonight. And it was just, I talked to him very briefly, and he said, I wish they would recognize the newcomers more here. And Dr. Paul used to always say that if you're new, if you got under a year of sobriety, if you would just raise your hand, just so I can see who's out there. And there's nobody out there raising their hand. So anyway, I'll forget about that one. So anyway, it's just... But I know you're out there because that was what I was doing. I would walk into meetings and not let anybody know I was new. I was so afraid of being sober that I didn't want anybody to know. So I'm trying to get out of the room, right? And then all of a sudden this guy, Marty, comes bouncing up to me because I called him the bouncer. He goes, hi. And I go, hi. You know, and I'm like, I've got the arms crossed. Just stay the hell away from me. Just go. Don't touch me. God damn it. You know, just leave. And he would go, whoa. And he hugged me. I'm just rigid. Just rigid. Rigid. And he goes, hey, what are you doing tonight? You want to go get something to eat? I go, I'm starving. You know, I didn't have any money. And I was afraid to say I don't have any money. He goes, well, we go to Millie's. I go, where's Millie's? He says, it's down the road. Take a right, take a left, go around the parking lot right there. I go, so I'm driving a 63 Ford Falcon station wagon. That was my Casa de Jose, as my brother said, because I lived in it. And I didn't want anybody to know I was living in the car. But it was a wonderful car. I bought it for $500 up in Montecito. And it was just like, I was just like, when I got here, I had a head of hair. I really did. It was really nasty, red, big curls, lots of curls. It was curly, and it was ugly. And if you're a guy and you got curls, you know you hate them. You absolutely hate them, right? I'm thinking of a lot of stories. Like when I was a kid, my dad walked into my bedroom and he found me using uncurl. I was probably 10. My dad died when I was 12. I was probably 10, and he goes, "What are you doing?" I said, I got to get rid of these curls. He says, don't use that. I said, why? He said, because it doesn't work. I said, how do you know? He said, look at me. He was totally bald, you know. He goes, I tried to get rid of it too, kid. It doesn't work, you know. So anyway, what was I talking about? Millie's. So I'm going to Millie's. So I'm getting in the car and I go over to Millie's and I'm just don't really, I hate people. There's a guy walking around here, a guy from New York. I saw him talk. There's a lot of people from New York, by the way. I feel like I'm surrounded by the medium, Long Island medium. Sometimes I hear you guys, I go, oh my God, could you tell me what I'm thinking? I go, they just go, hey, they just, but anyway, he's walking around with a t-shirt that says, what's it, dogs, because people suck or something like that. I just think that's so cool. It's just, but I don't know why I brought that up. Oh, but I was going to go up and talk to him, but he had a Yankees hat on, so I couldn't actually talk to him. So I drive the car over to Millie's, right, and I'm just pulling to the parking lot, and I'm the type of guy that's scared to death. I am the type of drunk that had to get drunk in the house to go out drinking, if you can identify with that. I'm scared to death. The fact that I'm up here tonight is God's work, trust me, because I do not like doing this. I don't like talking. I don't like being in front of people. I'm stripping myself naked of all pretense and defense, and I'm going to trust that you sons of bitches don't hurt me. This is where my head is going. But that's really the process that's happening here. So I'm like, pull up to the parking lot, and I pull far enough away so you can't see me, but close enough so I could see you. You know, because when you're new, you know what's going on. AA is miserable. And the same people share at every meeting, every day. They say the same thing over and over and over and over all the time. So I'm looking to see who's going in, and sure enough, it's all the people that they called on at the meeting. All the people. So I get back in the car, and I go to a bar. I go to a bar called the Mineshaft, which was in Long Beach, and it's a gang leather bar. And it's 10 o'clock at night. And those places don't open up till like 2 in the morning, right? It's open, but I'm standing there in the corner drinking a Coke by myself. And I start to smell leather. And I look up and there's a guy next to me and he says, "I thought you were going to Millie's." What? He goes, "Marty's my sponsor. He told me to keep my eye on you." And I just bowed my head in shame. He says, "It's going to be okay, kid. It's going to be okay. Don't worry about it." That was the extent of the conversation. The whole week long, I was just like ashamed of myself. And I went back to that same meeting, went through the same routine. Marty came up and hugged me, and my arms were crossed. And, "Get away from me. Don't touch me. Please. Somebody touch me. Don't touch me. Somebody leave me alone. God damn it. Okay, I'll go to Millie's. Where's Millie's again? I don't know where it is. Down the road, I can be there." So I would go down the road, do the same thing over and over again, go back to the mine shaft, and Michael said, "Joe, it's okay, man. It's okay. I said, I can't do it, man. I can't walk in there. I can't be with these people. I don't like anybody." He says, "It'll happen someday, kid." And then one day, this is after months, Marty comes bouncing up to me. He never stopped the routine. I can't tell you guys so much that the routine in Alcoholics Anonymous is what makes it attractive to people. Not the opinion, it's the routine. It's the effort, 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 little bit of result. Effort, 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 little bit of result. Effort, effort. Oh, I get it. So Marty come bouncing up to me this last night. He said, "Joe, would you like to go to Millie's?" And I went like this. I said, "Marty, I need your help." He said, "What?" I said, "Would you walk in with me?" He said, "Oh, Jesus, Joe, I'm so sorry." And he hugged me. And that was the first hug in sobriety. And I was about 5 or 6 months sober. And I went, "Oh, God." And then I went over to Millie's and I walked in. And there was a stupid U-shaped bar table, you know. And Marty goes, "Hey, you guys get out. Let Joe sit in here." So I, thank you, you know. And then I get in and they pinned me. Damn, I can't get out. I can't get out. What am I going to do? And then I ordered a hamburger. I thought I ordered a hamburger. And they go, "What did you get?" I said, "A hamburger. Can you say that again? A hamburger." Then they pointed to words that ended with "I," and they asked me to say every word that ended with an "I." It's so funny, you know? And that's exactly what happened. It was like the first time in my life I was not feeling offended for being myself. And then I got uncomfortable and I left. And I went to San Diego, knew nobody in San Diego. That was my original destination. And I got to San Diego and I turned 33 at my first AA meeting in San Diego. And I read How It Works for the first time. And I was 8 months sober. It was like I couldn't speak in meetings. I couldn't share in meetings. I couldn't do anything in meetings. And I started feeling a part of. I really started feeling a part of. It was really cool. I went and saw Grant's workshop today. And I got to tell you this story because there's been so much stuff talked about people that affect your life in sobriety. And every Wednesday, I go to I don't like calling it a home group because it's a men's meeting. I don't particularly like having a home group as a men's meeting, but that's the meeting that I get such a great fellowship. My sponsor is there and his sponsor is there. And his sponsor every Wednesday calls everybody on the list and say, "Hey, we're going to meet at Lido's. We're going to meet at Sully's. We're going to meet here for dinner." And while Grant's meeting was going on, Bob called. And Bob just celebrated his 99th belly button birthday. 4 meetings a week. Started coming to AA in 1947. He tells a wonderful story about 6 months sober. He actually got a call from Hugh McCoy, who I don't think it was his sponsor, but he says, "Hey, there's a guy in town over at the hospital. He needs a little AA meeting. We're getting a group from the Friday night meeting to go over." So they all go over to the meeting, and they get in this little private room, and they're all sitting around, and the guy comes in, and he sits down, and he goes, "Gentlemen, my name is Dr. Bob, and I'm here for some experimental surgery." He was 12 or 13 years sober. And he says, "I need AA right now. I just need you to go around the room, give me your name, your sobriety date, and your home group, and we'll end the meeting." And Bob met Bill, Bob, Lois, Marty Mann, Jim Burwell. Jim Burwell actually lived in San Diego. It's just like he's kind of like he got sober in Philly, but he lived in San Diego and started an awful lot of meetings in San Diego, him and his wife Rosa. And I'm just so happy to be sober. And I have to tell you that 27 years of sobriety is just a blimp. It's a very, very short period of time. 30 days is a very short period of time. 15 minutes is a long period of time for somebody that's struggling from alcoholism. And my job is to actually reach out and look for people that are buzzing and vibrating and hating every minute of being sober. And pulling them aside and go, hey, let me help you change the dial. There was a guy up in L.A., I can't think of his name, he used to always say, listen to the music of AA till you can understand the words. And he used to go on and say that sometimes you're receiving in an AM. I don't know if anybody listens to AM anymore, but we're transmitting an FM. We're going to help you dial it in. We're going to help you dial it in. If this meeting isn't working for you, some other meeting will work for you. If this isn't working for you, this message isn't working. That's what Lisa was talking about. You go through the schedule and you can get so confused. A, B, C, D, G, F, E. I don't know what is going on. I have to pee. Let me go. Let me get sober. I don't know what to do. How do I do it? How do I do it? And somebody says, come on, let's go along and do this thing together. One alcoholic working with another alcoholic is just an amazing feat of humanity. Bill Wilson for 6 months walked around trying to get people sober. Trying to get people sober. And nobody would get sober. He didn't have a cape. He was just going. June was talking about the Mayflower Hotel. When he was at the Mayflower Hotel, Bill didn't know what to do. And he's struggling with everything. And he didn't know how can I help anybody. I'm wanting to drink so bad. And he's walking up and down the Mayflower Hotel listening to the gay crowd inside. I mentioned that a couple of places, and they go, gay crowd? Yeah, he was thinking about going to a gay bar to get a drink, I think. I don't know, you know, but it's just kidding. But anyway, he made a phone call. He started taking some action. Milton Merrill, Edward Joseph Guyverson, one of the guys who started one of the biggest sobriety houses down in San Diego, used to always stand up at the Sunday morning meeting and says, joy of living is our code. And I hated the word joy because I hated Christmas, so I wouldn't listen to what he had to say. So I would associate joy with Christmas, I wouldn't listen to it. But then he would always say, but action is the key word. I'm telling you what, action is inaction is inaction. Action for me is like sometimes walking up to somebody and go, hey, I hate this place. Hey, I hate this message. Hey, I love this message. Hey, can you help me find this message? Can you help me understand this message? I didn't know what to do when I first got sober. And I was like, there was a guy who asked to be a sponsor. You're listening to a guy that's like incredibly lonely when I first got sober and hated people. Very, very difficult thing to overcome. And then everybody was talking about getting a sponsor, working the steps, blah, 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 blah. So I remember I asked this guy, Dale, to be my sponsor. And not once after I asked him to be my sponsor did he give me a call. Not once. Not once did he give me a call. Not once did he ever reach out to me. Nothing. He didn't do it. Of course, I didn't do any of that either. Trust me. And this one night, I was 11 months, 2 weeks sober. 11 months and 2 weeks sober. In Alcoholics Anonymous. Happy, joyous, and totally miserable. Absolutely miserable. With my arms crossed, with don't come near me, look on my face. I love being sober. And I watched this guy take a cake in San Diego and California. A lot of times they take the cake. I don't really like the cake routine. It's just my own thing. But they take the cake. And this night, this guy had two people giving him a cake, which pissed me off. Because it was just taking up my time. And he had 2 weeks more of me. He was getting 1 year sobriety. And the people that were giving him the cake, I used to see at every meeting I was going to in San Diego. And they were really happy. And I'm sitting there angry. And this little guy sitting next to me, Rick, who's now one of my best friends, he's looking at me and he's going, and he's about this big, tiny little guy, and he's a marine biologist, he was then. And he's looking up at me, and my arms are crossed, and he goes, Joe, are you okay? I'm fine. I'm really fine. And as Rick was asking me that, I see the guy Dale come in, and he sits right behind me, my sponsor, who hadn't talked to me since I asked him for help. And he's sitting right behind me, and I'm pissed. And I'm watching the guys, two guys give this one guy a cake, and the one guy's really happy about getting 1 year sobriety. And I am just freaking out, angry. Veins are popping in my head. And Dale goes, Joe, are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. Really? Yeah, I'm fine. And I'm in this old clubhouse with metal Catholic school chairs, I call them. You know the Catholic school chairs? And just nasty, uncomfortable chairs and linoleum tile. And it was a big Saturday night speaker meeting. And this Dale keeps going, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Fine." And then he did something that I don't guarantee is going to get you rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. He reached out and he touched me. And I imploded. I started to cry. I'm crying. He says, "Joe, let's get out of here for a minute." And I stood up, and Happy Joyce and Freer up front still taking their cake, you know. And as I stood up, the chair hooked on my pants and it went flying, and it just made this huge crash. And everybody turned and looked at me, and I'm like, "Oh, shit." And then Dale took me out in front, and we're downtown, down in Hillcrest in San Diego, and he's hugging me, and I'm like, "Holy shit." And he's hugging me, and he's doing this, and I'm like, and I'm crying. And then it starts going, and then it starts foaming, and it starts flowing. And I'm like, it could have gone on for an hour. I don't know how long it was, but it just kept going and going and flowing. "Oh, what happened?" And Dale goes, "I think he just took the third step." I said, "What?" He literally said that. I said, "What?" He goes, "I think he just turned your will and your life over with the care of God, as you understand." I said, "I did not." And I go, "Well, if I did, what do I do now?" And he turned into a prick. He said, "You launch out on a vigorous course of action." I said, "What?" He just said that. He goes, "I thought you were going to. I was going to sponsor you." I said, "Yeah, you have to call me. It's not my job to call you." And then, "What do I do? I need help. I don't know what to do. I don't hate everybody." He says, "You need to go to a couple of men's meetings, go to a big book meeting, go to a 12 and 12 meeting, go to a speaker meeting, go here, go there, go through every night of the week, go to a meeting, get a goddamn job while you're at it." "Oh, no, you don't understand the job. What are you, crazy?" You know, I was a bartender in Boston for years, and I tried to get to 10 bar when I first got sober. So I forgot to tell you, when I was up in L.A., I learned to be a hard hat, deep sea underwater welder. That'll cover up my manhood, right? I'm like, I was like, and I was also an amateur bicycle racer, but I've been hit four times by cars, and I had recently been hit, and my back was really screwed up, and I couldn't get a job. And I said, "Well, about the job thing, you know, I'm an underwater deep sea hardhat diver and underwater welder. I can make $100,000, $200,000, $400,000 a year anywhere I go." He says, "I don't give a shit. Get a job. Get a job, 8 hours a day." I go, "You know, I can make millions. We're doing that. I could go to Norway. Yeah, I don't care. Go to 7-Eleven and get a job." He didn't understand what I was saying. He said, "Yeah, I don't." So I'm at a meeting, and I'm whining about what he said to me. And I'm going to say something, and it's our job as responsible alcoholics. When somebody in the room is whining, and when they're done whining, they get up and walk out, it's our job to tell them, "You should stick around." I stuck around after I got whining about this guy. There was a woman sitting right next to me. She says, "Joe, I work for a major clothing manufacturer, and they're hiring people right now. They can get you a job in the morning if you want." I said, "You know I'm a hard-head deep-sea diver." She says, "You want a job?" I said, "I need a job bad." So the next day, can't believe I'm telling you this, I started selling men's underwear for a company called International Mail. Oh, it was just, oh, it was God working in my life, I'm telling you. It was just, you know, yeah, if you've ever seen internet, I mean, they don't sell like underwear. They sell thongs for men, you know. They sell that thing that Borat used to wear, you know. and they sold a lot of them. And, people used to, I used to start at 5 in the morning. I used to ride my bike down to downtown, and I'd start working. I'd put a headset on, and I'd start working. And welcome to International Mail. This is Joe. What can I do for you? Joe, you sound pretty hot. And I go, this guy's coming on to me on the phone. And they go, he's probably whacking off, too. And I'm literally going, and I'm, well, what do I do? And they go, turn on your best sexy voice and sell him a leather jacket. And I get back, how are you doing? Good. Joe, are you in the magazine? Yeah, I'm on page 32. And look at me, you know, I'm like, these guys were cut. And I would get these guys calling back and ordering crap that I would never buy or wear. And I sold a lot of it for a couple of years. It was the job that saved my life. It taught me how to show up. I hated every minute of it, because I think I told you I was a hothead deep sea diver. Right? I wasn't deep sea diving at all. You know, there was a lot going on down under, but it had nothing to do with me. And I was so grateful for that. I was so grateful for that. And then the miracle of AA happened when somebody asked me to sponsor him. I was sitting in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to go every Monday night, my home group, and this guy was sitting on the edge of a table. I'll never forget him, as it was like right now, and his legs were dangling. And he goes, Joe, can I talk to you for a minute? I go, yeah, what's going on, man? I need a sponsor. What? I need a sponsor. I can't do that. Yeah, you can. And this guy saved my life. He taught me how to show up. He taught me how to be of service. I didn't call anybody and go, hey, how do I sponsor somebody? I said, I guess we just pick up the book and we start reading it. I don't know what the hell to tell you. And I sponsored this guy for 8 years until I had to pull him off a respirator, because he trusted me with his life. He said, Joe, I'm dying and I need some help. And I want you to be the guy that says it's time. I said, I can't do that. And I was able to do it. And the doctor came up to me and said, Joe, it's time. And he wants you to say it's time. I said, Doc, it's time. Let's do it. And it was just, it was the most beautiful experience I've had in my life. To take somebody off a respirator and let them be. Let them go. I saw it in movies and death looks vicious. But it's not. When somebody trusts you with that precious thing, I'll tell you what, it changes your life. And it's happened a couple of times for me. My buddy Mike died of Lou Gehrig's disease, and that was just the most hideous disease. Tom died of AIDS. Mike died of Lou Gehrig's disease. And we used to drive up to the Pacific Group every Wednesday night. I'd get in the van, and we'd pick up people along the way, and they were all grunge workers, and they would get in the van. We'd get up to L.A., and they were all dressed in suits. I'm going, what the Christ happened back there? They go, well, we're going to the Pacific Group. I go, and I'm in shorts and a T-shirt. They go, aren't you getting dressed up? I said, no, I'm just going to AA, you know? And we'd come back in the van, and I thought everybody was sound asleep, and me and Mike would sit in the front of the room, front of the van, and talk. Mike would say, Joe, I'm scared. He was 32 years old. They said, they gave me 2.5 years to live. This is going to be the best 2.5 years of my life, because you and I are going to spend it together. His wife left him. She couldn't handle it. The whole group of us in AA picked him up, literally picked him up, wiped his ass, wiped his face, brought him to meetings. God dang it. When he was dying, when he was in hospice, down in hospice, San Diego hospice, he was smoking too, right? So he's in hospice dying. And he'd go, hey, I need a cigarette. And we'd pick him up out of his bed, put him in a wheelchair, roll him outside, and he'd have 2 puffs of a cigarette. And he goes, God, that was good. And we'd put him back into bed. What a gift. People like that taught me how to be of maximum service. The big book says on page 77, fit ourselves, our purpose is to be of maximum self, maximum service to God and our fellows. Maximum to me might be totally different than maximum to you, but maximum is maximum. How much can I do to help somebody else when I'm in battle? by selfishness and self-centeredness. When somebody says I need a sponsor, it's not because they like what I have. It's because God intervened and didn't like something going on inside of me. I swear to God. Because every time somebody I've worked with, it's always an issue that I have not been able to deal with on my own. They helped me. The big book for me is not to be used as a shield. And I, for the longest time, I used it as a shield. It's supposed to be used as a mirror. It's supposed to be used so I can look at myself, my defects of character, and help change me. Ask God to change me into the person that He wants me to be, not the person that I want to be. The person I want to be, I'm disappointed all the time. Trust me. I'm disappointed. When I was out there with the basketball court today, I said, Jesus Christ, I can't play basketball, because every one of my brothers, I had five of them, said, you can't play basketball. I believed I couldn't play basketball. I picked up that son of a bitch and I started bouncing it. And I started to throw it. Couldn't hit the court. Couldn't hit the basket. Couldn't do it. And then I just started to concentrate. I just started to look. I remember it's like when they teach us how to drive a car, they don't go, don't look at the steering wheel, look at where you're going. I remember that. I'm out there shooting the basketball. I'm going to look where the ball is going. Not at the ball, because that's what I was doing. I was looking at the ball, and the ball would go. Pshht. I started looking where it was going. All of a sudden, it started getting a little closer, and a little closer, and a little closer. Don't ever give up. Don't ever give up. If you've got dreams, dream bigger than you could ever dream in your life. I think we don't let people dream enough. I was over in Hong Kong. I was traveling around the world for work a lot. I was over in Hong Kong. Great meetings in Hong Kong, by the way. Great meetings. And I forgot what I was going to say there for a minute. It was really weird. It was they have a place called Pinnacle Peaks. That's a steakhouse in San Diego, Victoria Peak or something like that. And it's a straight up. If you think San Francisco is hilly, holy shit, go to Hong Kong. Oh my God, it's unbelievable. It's like straight up. So everybody goes, you should hike up the hill. I mean, you got to be kidding. They go, it's a great walk, and you really feel good about yourself. So it's kind of a challenge, really. Kind of hefty, right? So I decided to go walking up the hill. And I'm walking up the hill, and there's these little Asian women flying by me. You can't, boom, I'll show you. And I start picking up my pace, and humidity is 150% in Hong Kong. Now I sweat like a stuck pig to begin with, and I'm going up this hill, I'm wearing a black shirt. And I'm sweating. Now the people are coming down the hill, and I'm still going up. And they're looking at me like I'm, how you doing? Good. And I'm going to do it. So I kept doing it. I kept forcing myself to go, and the sweat's just bubbling off of me. And I made it to the top of the hill. And I was embarrassed by what I looked like, because I'm just drenched. And I go into a T-shirt shop, and they have nothing but Chinese Mandarin or Cantonese lettering, and it's just like, oh Christ, I hate this. I'm not a touristy guy. So I said, I need a t-shirt. She said, oh, the wonderful one right there, buy that one. Very good size. You size. So I buy the t-shirt, and she says, go change your shirt. So I took the shirt out back, and I changed my shirt, and I put it on, and I threw the other one out. It was so nasty. And I said, what's this saying? She says, oh, it means don't give up. I was like, you kidding me, God? Are you kidding me, God? Don't give up. Really? Y'all, don't give up. And off I went. I'm going, this is crazy. This is absolutely crazy. And I didn't want to. AA was the same way with me. I would go to meetings and just hate being sober. You know what I mean, hate being sober? Just like, oh, I can't stand these people anymore. And then somebody said, well, why don't you go over here? So I go over there, and all of a sudden, I'm changing the music. I'm listening to a message that was always the same that I heard before, but it's being said by different people. I think love and tolerance is our code. And sometimes that tolerance doesn't come through very well. The love always does, but sometimes the tolerance doesn't. And then I started changing. I went to a lot of men's meetings, and battled with myself for years. Absolutely battled with myself for years. Just happy, joyous, and free. And I started quoting the big book, and which was worse. Then I started helping people who misquoted the big book. Oh, that'll get you going in an AA meeting. That'll get you going in an AA meeting. The one pet peeve I always hear says, I'm going to share today what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. God damn it, it doesn't say that in the book. It says what we were like, what happened, and what we're like now. You start talking about it, you ain't going to be talking about that. stuff that's going inside of you. They're going to be talking about the outside stuff. And I believe that to this day, that what we will like, what happened, and what we will like translates to what I'm like, what happened, and what I'm like. And still, I'm crazy. I can walk into an AA meeting and feel so alone. So alone. The other one was like, the chapter to the agnostic. Hear it every time we hear it, how it works read. ABCs, the chapter to the agnostic. This is how my thinking goes. I am not an agnostic. Born and raised Irish Catholic. Very Irish, very Catholic. I'm not an agnostic, therefore I won't read the chapter to the agnostic. Right? So I'm over at my sponsor's house, Eugene, and he goes, let's read. Why don't you start with that chapter right there? And I went, it's called We Agnostics. He goes, yeah, why don't you read that? I thought it was called the chapter to the agnostic. He goes, no, it's called We Agnostics. I went, really? And I started reading it. That changed my life. It changed my life. And Eugene helped me read this stuff. And another thing people used to do is like they called it poop literature. You know, the pamphlets? Because the big book scared the crap out of me. I didn't mean to put both of those words together. But it did. And people used to say, Joe, you should read this. And they gave me, I'll never forget, the first one was The Member's Eye View of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're struggling with AA, pick up A Member's Eye View of Alcoholics Anonymous for me. It was a talk given by a man named Alan McGinnis who lived up in LA, who was just, for me, he changed my life. Because he talks about an awful lot of stuff. He talks about a lot of stuff that's going on inside of us, inside of here. This is the craziest app God ever put in our world. This thing right here is just unbelievable. Al's meditations, if you haven't hit them, try, if you can, hit it tomorrow or Friday or Saturday. There's something about what that man, he takes meditation out of the sky and he puts it in your eyes. I hope you get a chance to do that, because he was talking about that we are not our minds, and I've heard that an awful lot. We are not our minds. You know, you're going to listen to your head. Don't listen to this thing. Jesus is going to tell me to do some awful stuff. I'm standing in the line at Starbucks. I'm number 30 in Starbucks, and I'm so pissed off that they've hired these people to work at Starbucks, and I'm pissed off, and I'm just so angry. But I just want to just go up there and tell them how to make a stupid cup of tea. That's all I want. Just a cup of tea, and I'm so angry. And by the time I get up there, they go, "Hi, can I help you?" I go, "Well, I forget what I wanted now. I got all this stuff. I've got all this six-step stuff going on before I get a chance to look you in the eye. I got all this anger and resentment going on, and then all of a sudden it's like, damn. I love being sober, and the people before me this week have just—they've opened my eyes to a new way of living." Just really, Eileen has become my new best friend. It's really weird. It's just like, just because we ended up knowing people ourselves. I don't know why I meet people in other cities, and all of a sudden I go, hey, do you know this guy? Hey, yeah, we sat and we talked for 2 hours yesterday. I told her I was afraid to come up here. She says, for Christ's sakes. She didn't say that, because I don't think she used the word Christ. I don't know. But she helped me understand that I am myself, and I can just be myself. If you're in Alcoholics Anonymous for anything other than that, you're going to be incredibly disappointed with Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't say that enough. Because people come in here and they think they're going to get the big car, the big job, the big house, the money, the power. You might get all that sort of stuff, and it might not fix anything. If you can just get yourself back, get your soul back, oh my God, it's an amazing experience, I believe. And I think that really happened for me at 8 years sober. When I was telling you, I used to quote the book and misquote. When people misquote, I would make sure that they knew, God damn it, that they were doing it wrong. And I would admit, just because I was so afraid. I am riddled with 100 forms of fear and self-delusion. If you saw his little workshop this afternoon, he had a whole list of defects of character. And they were just forms of fear and self-delusion. 100 forms of fear and self-delusion is a lot. It's a lot. The big book doesn't list all the fears and self-delusion. because it just can, I can manufacture. Dr. Paul used to say, we used to manufacture our own misery. We do it all the time. I do it all the time. And in 8 years sober, I'm like, not very happy, not very joyous, and not very free about being an alcoholic. And I just hated everything in my life. I had been working for a law firm, and I was kind of sick of it, because they really weren't recognizing my ability at all. So I decided to quit, and I went back to International Mail. Why, I have no idea. But it was the only people that I could think about going back to. And I went back to get that job part-time and go to school. And at the same time, I started losing weight, like drastically. And I'm going to all my meetings, and I'm really sponsoring people all over town. It's a really great time, and I'm just like, yeah, I'm hating myself, and I'm hating people, and all this sort of crap. And on New Year's Eve, 1997, my buddy Brian took me to the Alcathon that was going on. And I had been going, this is so weird, I forgot about to tell you this. So I didn't have any insurance, and everybody said, why don't you go over to the VA? I go, what am I going to go to the VA for? They go, you said you were in the Coast Guard. I said, yeah, I was in the Coast Guard years ago. They said, you're a veteran, right? Because I was in the Coast Guard? I go, yeah, you get a DD-214? I go, yeah, I got a DD-214. Well, you're a veteran. You can go over to the Coast Guard and they'll check you out. I mean, over to the VA. So I went over to the VA and they checked me out. You know, they asked me questions like, do you ever have heart palpitations? All the time. Oh, they put you on the machines, you know. Everything, you know, everything they asked me. What's your HIV status? I'm negative. What's going on with your life? I don't know. Miserable. So they kept running tests and running tests and running tests and going to meetings. And this night I'm going to the Alcathon. Brian takes me to the Alcathon and everybody goes, Joe, you look like shit. Ah, shut up. Down to 170 pounds. Just, ugh. So I go home and I go to bed. And on my 8th birthday, 98. My 8th birthday, everybody's calling, hey, happy birthday, yeah. They get a call from the VA. They said, Mr. Conroy, yes, you need to get the VA this afternoon as soon as you can. You just tested positive for pneumocystis pneumonia. I went, thanks, doc. So I put down the phone and I go next door to Hippie Jim, who I sponsored. We lived in a commune, kinda. I said, Jim, they told me I just got tested positive for pneumocystis pneumonia. What's that? I knew what it was. He looks up in his dictionary, because Jim liked dictionaries. He goes, it's a virus that hits people with compromised immune systems. I went, wow. So I called Tom, my first sponsee. I said, Tom, I need to go over to the VA. He comes over and picks me up. He goes, what's going on? I said, I got pneumocystis pneumonia. He says, what? I said, yeah, it's crazy, huh? So I get in the VA, it was New Year's Day, 1988, and this nurse who didn't want to be working that day, says, what? I went, I think you guys just called me in to see the doctor. For what? And the doctor heard, and she come flying out. She says, Mr. Conroy, come back here. And she put me in a room, she says, how long have you been HIV positive? I said, I didn't know I was HIV positive. She says, you're kidding. We just gave you that information over the phone? I went, yeah. And I don't know where it came from. And I said, doc, she says, you're incredibly sick. And if we don't do something, you won't be here much longer. I said, doc, I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous for 8 years. These people talk about surrender. Never known what it felt like to surrender till right now. I said, I need your help. She says, it's going to hurt. I said, I don't care. And I got on the phone and I called Bus, my sponsor. He says, what's going on, dude? I said, I'm dying. He said, you can't die. I got to give you a cake Friday night at the meeting. I said, Bus, I'm dying. Ah, you're not. And I went to the men's meeting. And I walked into the room and I met Steve at the door. He was the greeter. He says, Joe, you look like shit. He said, let me tell you about my week. And I told him. He said, oh, man. Oh, man. And I sat down in the back row. I'm a back row guy with my arms crossed. Stay away from me. Don't look at me. Don't touch me. And Steve went over and he told the guy next to him. The guy next to him told the guy next to him. The guy next to him told the guy next to him. And all of a sudden, the whole room knew what was going on with Joe in the back row. Then I got up and took a cake, and Bus goes, "Joe's had a hell of a week. Hell of a week. I hope he has a lot more. I'm going to tell you what's going on in his life." And I stood there and I told him, I said, "Guys, I'm dying. I'm dying of alcoholism because I don't want or need your help. But I said, there's a stupid prayer I see in every hall I go in AA called the Footprints. And I hated it and I can't stand it. And it's about some footprints in the sand, somebody carrying somebody else. And I know what it means now. I can't do this alone, guys. I can't." And the biggest secret was that I was gay. And I just didn't want nobody to know that. I just hid that from everybody and everything. And I stood there and these guys said, "Joe, it doesn't make any difference who or what you are." And I didn't believe that. And I had a lot of home treatment for the next 6 months. And I had no money, and I had no food, and I would go to sleep at night, and there was nothing in the refrigerator, and I would wake up in the morning, and the guys from the meeting would come and put food in my refrigerator. And the words I said to Eileen the other day was, "I'm not worthy to be here." I've never felt worthy to be anywhere. It's just my nature. It is something that has taken me a long time to have God remove. And I swear to God, it's one conference, it's one meeting, it's one person, it's one sponsee at a time that's doing it for me. My ideas do not work. My old ideas do not work. They've kept me in bondage of self for a long time. And sometimes it takes me a long time to recognize those. It really, really does. When Bonnie was talking last night, Craig, Bonnie, because he did Bonnie, right? He did Bonnie. And I was like, wow. I could go home and tell everybody I heard Bonnie Fife tell his story. And I was like, his whole thing and everybody's whole thing, we share our experience no matter what our experience is, so it can help just one other person. That might be how many people, and it doesn't make any difference how many people in a room of alcoholics. Not the only person, I might be the only person, I've never believed that, but usually our stories don't help everybody. There's one other person that gets the seemingly hopeless state of mind and body out of their self for that moment when you're listening to somebody tell this story, and it's a story of hope. If we stood up here and told you that you could stay sober for 27 years and absolutely hate it, would you do it? All along the way, I have been blessed by miracles, I believe. A lot of times people say, this is another one of my pet peeves. It's not really a pet peeves. I think it's just something that I've learned. A lot of people say, AA is magic. It's not magic. Magic is a trick. It's something I could teach you, show you, and you could show somebody else. AA is so mysterious. One alcoholic working with another alcoholic makes no sense. No sense to anybody. But there's identification that happens when somebody says, "I need help," and the other person says, "I am here to help you. I am here." We don't put capes on. We don't fly around the world as super sober people. We just show up and we go, "What can I do?" And usually it might be just a moment in time that they need. It might be just, I see so many people walk out of AA and never come back. Can I chase them down? I don't know. Does somebody else chase them down? I don't know. But sometimes our message gets watered down with the stuff Dr. Bob talked about. Freudian complexes and things that are good for the scientific mind. Our message has to have depth and weight. It has to have depth and weight, not for the masses, for one individual that's suffering from a seemingly hopeless state of mind or body. And they're trying to get help. They're coming to meetings and they don't know how to say, "I need help." I've heard an awful lot of newcomers. I go to a lot of newcomers meetings and they say, "Would you like to share?" And it might take them 10, 15, 20 minutes to say, "I need help." Sometimes we shut them off way too early. I don't know if that's right or wrong, but they leave and they don't come back. I don't know if that's right or wrong, but sometimes my job is to say, slow down for a minute. Let me help you try to understand this music, because this is Greek to most people. This is Greek to most people. The language of the heart is not something that we're learned to live with. We're never taught this sort of stuff. I go home to my family back in Norwood, and it's just, I was there for a funeral a month ago. My cousins, my father's brother has six kids. My father had six kids, and they're two different. We're not emotionally connected. We sit there stoically. My cousins are bawling. Their mother died. They're bawling. We're going, what the hell are they so emotional about? But they just learned something totally different. I don't know why. I don't know how you get that sort of stuff. But in AA, you know, the next frontier, emotional sobriety, is right here and right now. I have to tell you that. You know, if you're here to get anything other than sobriety, you're going to be disappointed again with AA. Sobriety has to be good enough for you. And then you start practicing these principles in all your affairs, and you start changing one little defect of character at a time. You start, you know, like doing that Michelangelo shit where you're chipping away all the clay or whatever, the marble, and bringing Michelangelo out. You know, they always asked him, he said, oh, you did a great job creating that. He says, I didn't do anything but chip away the marble that was covering up the work of art. And that's what I think we do here. That's what I think the 12 steps do. They chip away the marble. They chip away the stone. They chip away the concrete that's keeping me away from you. My friend TJ from the Bronx used to say to me all the time, Conroy, you got to take these and put them down by your side. So TJ, that's a hard thing for me to do. Because I want to sit there with my arms crossed with the best stay away from me. Look, I don't really need your guys' help. I don't really need your help. Oh, I'm dying. I wish somebody would help me. I wish somebody would help me. And I'll tell you what, when that 1988, when my life was changed, I believe that's when I was rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. Bill Wilson talks about the fourth dimension of existence. I thought it was, we have an area down San Diego called La Jolla, the top of the hill, just fancy crap. That's where I thought the fourth dimension of existence was. And my sponsor Ken goes, Joe, it's right here and right now. It's right underneath your feet. If you live in the now, you're living, you're one. He said, turn that word around and it spells out the word one. I go, how do you do that, Ken? He goes, you just live right here in this moment. Right here. It's like new. So new. It's like it's brilliantly new. The moment. Oh, God, it's new. Oh, Christ. And you want to know something? It'll never happen again. Never happen again. Fear keeps me from the inability to shoot the basketball. That's what it does. It can be as simple as that. It can be absolutely as simple as that. Joy of living is our code, but action is the key word. I always wanted somebody to give me the joy. I've joined gym after gym after gym, but I never take the action once I join the gym. And I get absolutely zero results. And then I blame Bally's. I blame 24-hour fitness. I blame Fitness Planet Fitness. I blame this fitness, Men's Health Fitness. I read these magazines, I don't lose or get nothing. I want to be cut. Because I'm sitting there with a big ham and cheese sandwich and a bag of Fritos and a Coke, reading Health Fitness. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So Steve said, do something different. I was walking by and walking by and walking by on those people over there. The people with the kayaks and the sailboats. I knew how to scuba dive. But I walked by today and I go, what's your guy's deal? What do you mean by that? I'm like, yeah, I'm a tough guy. What's your guy's deal? Well, we sailboats and kayaks and the other crap. And I go, I want to sail. You know how to sail? I said, no. I need help. He says, well, we're booked up for tomorrow. We'll do Thursday or Friday. Well, Friday, tomorrow is Thursday. She goes, we'll book that. And then she goes, no, you know what? We've got one spot open at 10:30. I said, put me down. put me down. And I called Ken. I said, Ken, I'm going to go sailing. Watch out for the sharks. Thanks for your confidence, you know. But then he said, that's good, kid. It's really good. Don't give up. You know, dream like you've never dreamt before. Like bigger, 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 bigger dreams. I struggle with work right now because I've been working for the same law firm. I forgot to say, I went back to the law firm, and then they started giving me promotions, and they started sending me around the world and training people. We have a huge law firm, training people around the world, and I've trained myself out of a job. In my head, you know. So I'm like at this point of, you know, when Lisa was talking about, you know, you just change jobs and you're like, oh, it's scary, you know? It's scary. It's like the big boogeyman. You got to go back on Monday to a new bunch of people. Ugh. Hi. Oh, right. I could just see it, you know, just running into the bathroom. What have I done? Oh, Christ. Oh, I love it. Everything's great. Oh, I hate myself. I shouldn't have done this. You know? I understand that sort of stuff. And I do that before I even apply for a job. For the longest time, I used to be a six-digit dialer when you could only just dial the six. You know, and I think about the last digit before I dial that. What are they going to say? Oh, shit. Oh, I better not. Nah, put the phone down. Nah. Let me try to call the... What if they say, what do you, oh, no, I can't put that down. You know, try it again now. It's the same way with Costco. I would buy crap at Costco and be so afraid to return it. Absolutely petrified to return stuff I don't need. Absolutely petrified. And I would go to, every year I'd go to the Goodwill and donate it. And they go, this looks like it hasn't been touched. It hasn't. Brand new, in the box. They go, why don't you return, the Goodwill are going, why don't you return it? It's from Costco, right? Oh, yeah, they go, they'll take anything back. I go, why don't you guys just take it and leave me alone? I don't do that anymore. I actually return it. And it's like, it's almost like, you know, I would always think, what are they going to think of me? They don't think of us. Honest to God, they don't. They don't care. You know, they're there to help us. Oh, yeah, you got a card? Give me a card. So it's done. That quick, but I could just, oh my God, I just, sometimes being sober is, it's a wonderful experience, it really is. I hope you get a chance to share it, you know, you know, it doesn't, you know, Eugene, my sponsor, because I couldn't look at anybody in the eye when I got sober. He said, Joe, you're going to be speaking in front of a lot of people in your sobriety. It's going to happen. I go, Eugene, it won't. He used to take me to the La Jolla speaker meeting. I'll tell you this last story and I'll shut up. The lawyer speaker on Saturday night, it was a big speaker meeting. I hated it. It was just too rigid. Everybody was dressed up. And the speakers were all fabulous. But I wasn't tuned in. I wasn't there. I wasn't in the moment. I wasn't right here. And Eugene used to say, Joe, sit in your hands for an hour. Just sit and listen. I'll never forget this one. He made me sit in the front row. This one night, this poor woman was up there telling her story, and she was awful. Awful, awful, awful. And I'm going, she's terrible. He said, shut up. I don't want to stay here anymore. Shut up. So she's done with her pitch, and she goes, I don't know if I've helped anybody here tonight. You haven't. And I'm like, and then she goes, I got to tell you this one story. She says, when I first got sober, I'm still sitting on my hands here. That's weird. It was, felt pretty good. It's the first time I had underwear on all week. Maybe that's what it was. So. Well, who is that? It was, I was actually debating whether to wear underwear tonight. That was going to be, so anyway, she said, I don't know if I've helped you with anything here. And I said, it happened. So she says, I struggled with the God concept for a long time until I was at a meeting and somebody else shared, the closest you can get to God is in the search for God. And I went, wow. And she said, shut up. I go, no. That's an aha. Somebody said that during the week, an aha moment. The closest I can get to God is in the search for God. I was not an agnostic, but I didn't believe in the power of God. I didn't believe in that search. I wanted somebody to, like, give me the sign. Give me the sign. And when she said the closest I can get to God was in the search to God. And then she said a caveat. If you're trying to figure it out, you're not living in faith. I was trying to figure it out on my own. I don't do that anymore. I don't do that anymore. When somebody says, Joe, can you help me with this? I go, I don't think so. I don't know what's going on with this. And I go, maybe you can help me with it. That's my big struggle with work right now. We're learning an awful lot of technical stuff. And I just feel too old and too worn out to learn it. I don't really want to learn it. Why do I have to learn it? Because you're the boss. Oh. Okay. So that's really where I'm trying to figure all this stuff out. And I think I always ask God for help. So if you don't think God will help, all you got to do is ask. Really. All you got to do is ask. All you got to do is ask. God, help me. What is your God? I have no idea. I have God is love, God is joy, God is beauty. Comes in all different sizes and colors and shapes. God is good. God is absolutely good. God has been here all week. I really do believe it. I've seen it in the eyes, not in the piercings, not in the people piercing the line. There's no God there. And you know, and then they go, they turn around and then they can barely walk. They're running over there to pierce it. I'm like, oh my God. But it's been just such a wonderful trip. Just a wonderful, and I think it exudes love. Isn't there an awful lot of love going on around here? It's just love, you know, it really is. There's like people here that just like, that are probably, for the first time in their life, letting go. Letting go and letting something else happen. I love being sober. It's the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. And Steve, the fellowship that you've put together here is just I think it's miraculous. And it's a mysterious fellowship at the same time, because there's people here that would never have mixed. Would never have mixed. And yet I've seen a lot of meetings this week where the music has just been rocking. Just been rocking with the language of the heart. Peace.